Luke, when we started this season, I don't think we had planned to go into January initially.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it's worked out that way quite nicely for a mix of different reasons. And as we were working to line up who our last couple of guests were, you and I both had the idea of reaching out to Jonathan DeRosiers. And while I won't go into the full story, I'll save it for the actual episode. It was fun that when I reached out, he'd been listening to a recent episode of Crossword, and it became a good basis for this episode. But it's been fun to watch how some of our guest wrangling sort of comes about. And I was really happy that this worked out the way it did, bringing Jonathan on to the show.
I'll admit I got Jonathan DeRosiers mixed up with Jonathan Bossinger in my head. Both Jonathans, too many Jonathans in the WordPress project, don't you think?
You can't have too many Jonathans, Luke.
It seemed at times in this episode that there might have been too many Jonathans. We talked about a lot about the WordPress community. We talked about like this concept of duocracy and meritocracy. Is there a difference there?
Yep.
And really just focusing on contributions. What do contributions look like? A format for contributions? Where are they coming from? How can we enable them? That sort of thing.
One of the things I really enjoyed in this episode as well is Jonathan's a great writer, so I enjoyed reading some of his pieces in prep for this, and got me thinking about a few things I hadn't considered. And one in particular that we touched on is this idea of like, how do you harness the energy of these passive contributors? And I got a couple of good takeaways from that I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, and I think we talked a good bit about that in this episode. So why don't we begin? Jonathan DeRosiers is a principal software engineer at Bluehost, and he's a WordPress core committer. Before we start, let's hear from our sponsors.
Big Scoots is a fully managed WordPress hosting company that takes a service-first approach to the organization that they've built, focused on human support, which means no AI chatbots. I moved my personal blog over to Big Scoots on a weekend, and I ran into some issues with configuring my DNS. I was expecting to have to wait a day or two for help, but Zach on the support team jumped in, answered my questions, and got me up and running the same day. The Big Scoots team is also active in the WordPress community, participating in WordCamps, putting on their own events, and sponsoring core contribution. They work closely with agencies, tech platforms, and product companies through their partner program, and I've spoken firsthand with many of their partners, and they're great to work with. For Crossword listeners, they're offering 98% off your first 2 months. Go to bigscoots.com/crossword or enter crossword at checkout. Independent Analytics is simple, frustration-free, local analytics for WordPress, built by Ben Sibley and Andrew Mead. If your experience is anything like mine, logging into Google Analytics and complex tools like it can be frustrating at best. Independent Analytics offers you a simple, clean dashboard that gives you the data you want and the way you want it inside the WordPress admin, and it's your data. It's collected on your server and stays on your server. They offer a free version that gives you all the basic analytics you need out of the box and a pro version for $79 a year that gives you e-commerce analytics, advanced reports, click tracking, and more. I use Independent Analytics on my own WordPress blog, and I recommend you try it for yourself. Go to independentwp.com/crossword. EventCoy is a modern event calendar plugin for WordPress built by Leslie and Ahmad, who've been building products in the WordPress space for years. When I first heard that they were planning an events plugin, my initial reaction was, hasn't that already been done? As soon as I saw the demo, though, I changed my mind. They've built a great product in the event space, and they're thinking about it from the outset as an ecosystem where other product makers can join in. They have a free version and a pro version that's only $99 a year. I bought several licenses myself, and I'm excited about their roadmap. If you haven't already, I recommend you try it out for yourself. Go to eventcoy.com/crossword. That's eventcoy, K-O-I. .com/crossword. So, Jonathan, when we were preparing for our final guests for the season, you were on Luke's and my list. And when I reached out to you, it was funny that you'd mentioned that you'd actually been working on a blog post in response to a conversation that Luke and I had had. And we'd been going back and forth with some like speculation about like some of how things have been done in Core. And I think you'd called out, as I'm recalling correctly, you'd appreciated that we were trying to at least call out some of those assumptions, because you're also someone who knows a lot about what's actually been going on there. But you haven't published it yet. Looking forward to if and when you get the chance to finish doing so. But that was a fun fun context set when I reached out. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
This is about the comments, isn't it? The fact that this new feature where you can add little comments in line on each block. And I think I was having a go, not exactly having a go, but I was a little upset with the implementation. And I think I'd said something like, I wasn't around for the discussion. There must have been a good reason for this, but I don't know what that good reason is. And it's a bit frustrating that it's stored as comments. So set the record straight, Jonathan. Why is it stored that way?
So I actually wasn't involved with that conversation either. And I do have the issue open in my browser to read through and actually understand that. But I helped a lot with that feature as far as the polish and making sure that, you know, the overall experience of that was as good as it could be prior to release, right? As, you know, we fix bugs and we catch different things. I think one of the things I requested was the command enter to submit the note, which is standard in Google Docs and a lot of things. And so I was kept finding myself hitting that and I didn't know why I wasn't sending my note. But more what interested me the most was how you both are very self-aware of the dynamics of open source and you were being very careful to be fair to the people that did participate in the building of that feature and the feedback that you were offering and when you chose to offer that. And so I got thinking a lot around, you know, who's allowed to participate in open source and what are the expectations for you when you do participate and how can you participate in different ways while being mindful of this to help ensure you have a more positive journey and experience. And so I will publish this post, I promise, and I'm pretty close, but I keep going down different rabbit holes where I could write different posts and this is too long. I need to cut this part out. But essentially I found that I was painting in many ways the same problem that Dries Buytaert had outlined around the maker taker problem. And I stepped back and I was thinking about the types of contributions you can have. And I created two really large high level buckets of active and passive. You know, passive is everybody who's using a piece of software is actually passively contributing in some way. And so the very basic level of that is you're voting by saying, this software solves a problem of mine. And over time, if you keep using it, you're saying it's doing a good enough job solving that problem that I'm going to continue using it and it's valuable to me. But unfortunately, there's a ceiling with passive contributing, right? There's another example is when you, which is more practical, where when you have a WordPress site, it checks for an update every so often. And in order to return the right result, it needs to know, the WordPress.org server needs to know what version of WordPress you're actually running right now, what version of PHP you're running, what extensions do you have active for PHP. And this helps WordPress determine if you are compatible with the next version that's available, if there is one. But at scale, that paints a really detailed picture of what's the percentage of sites that has a given extension available. We recently had that with Bcrypt and adding password hashing, improved password hashing to every WordPress site, where there was enough sites that had Bcrypt where we were confident enough to be able to make that change, right? And so that's a very valuable contribution, but many people have no awareness at all that they're actually contributing to the project in that way, right?
Right, but with the passive contributions, they, you know, great and helpful and everything, but really at the end of the day, WordPress is a duocracy, and passive isn't really so much doing as the active contributions might be.
Well,
Actually, just before you go into that, Jonathan, I was reading your post on maintainers. And one thing that stood out to me, because I would have agreed with Luke, but you called out actually that it's a duocracy by definition is more about like those who show up versus WordPress actually be more of a meritocracy. Because just because you show up doesn't mean the thing gets done. But to me, it feels like we're somewhere in the middle of that. Because if I go into a track ticket and leave comments, those may be useful. And it may be helpful and may have an influence, but just because I did that out of nowhere doesn't mean that gets done versus that we have this thing about like merit that is a part of it, where it's like, how much weight do we give to like the folks who've been showing, not only showing up, but actually getting things done for a while.
So that's interesting, Jonathan. Like I've actually never made a distinction myself between a meritocracy and a duocracy. I usually use those synonymously. So what are you saying? Are you saying that there's a difference and you'd be right? There's a difference between the people who, maybe create a pull request, create a track ticket change set, and then also the people who actually get those merged.
Go ahead. Well, Jonathan. So I think we may need to come up with code names because we're both Jonathan and which I think that was at Jonathan Wald, right? Is that correct, Luke?
Well, I was replying to Jonathan Wald. I'll just call you Wald, all right?
Good enough. What I was actually doing is pulling up on your piece on maintainers, you talked about this and I was going to look at your definition there. So it's like you said, as opposed to decisions being strictly made by those who show up, a duocracy, commit access in WordPress is meritocratic. So you were talking more about like commit access. You're not going to just give commit to someone who shows up, but it to me sparked enough of the distinction that was worth discussing, where it's like, there is value in showing up, but like, where is that on the sliding scale of influence?
Sure. And when you show up, you know, there's a couple of things that are very basic that help you have a good experience, right? When you show up and participate, the expectation is that you're prepared, you've done some research, you're at least knowledgeable enough about what you want to talk about that you can have a positive effect, right? And I think that the more people that do show up, the better the result in the end. But we can't let everybody have commit access, right? Like there has to be some level of duocracy blended with meritocracy. You know, there could be someone that is very prolific with some other software, right? And then they show up to contribute to WordPress, but we wouldn't necessarily just trust them because of their merit from this other endeavor to make good decisions in the context of WordPress. They could still show up. We still want them to show up. We want them to work on problems and help us solve things in different ways because they have unique experience and ways of thinking. But they need to demonstrate some level of goodwill and good decision-making in the context of our project in order to be granted that capability of committing.
So something I'm thinking through here. I like this idea of classifying active versus passive because it resonates with something I've thought about for a long time too, which is that there is inherent value in usage and also just there's something about when folks use WordPress and open source software in general, I think there's a recognition that when you get others to use it with you, that you also value or that you also receive value in it. That stood out to me for a long time. Like why do people like show up at meetups and what's in it for them? And there's a mix of different things, but I look at it, you know, I sort of set aside altruism and other things, I set that aside. And it's like, there's an inherent value because if I can get more people to adopt it, that benefits me as well. And that feels like that fits into that passive category. It's like, how do we increase the passive contribution by more people using it?
The real question on everybody's lips then becomes, is sponsorship active or passive contribution?
Yes. So in my post, I don't aim to get into the types of contribution, like financial, time-based, or effort-based, whatever. I more want to focus on, I do want to answer that, but I'm going to focus on how do you recognize which group you're in? When is it okay to be in each group? So in the example of the notes feature, you, Luke, were choosing to be a passive contributor there because you're standing by and you're learning. And even though you're not submitting your thoughts to help improve the feature right now, you're intentionally being passive for the moment, right?
Well, in that moment, yeah, but this was after I had already created a pull request, a change set on track, and submitted it, which, you know, it hasn't got any attention, and understandably so, because, and I think, I mean, I won't get into the weeds there, because I had to touch so many different things. I understand why this would never actually be merged. I understand why it wasn't done in the first place by actually doing it, because it gets complicated, which was my frustration, which then I was expressing.
But you were self-aware enough to know. You were self-aware enough to know that there needed to be a period where you were passive in order to mm-hmm. offer that valuable feedback, right? And so I find that for me, passive contributors are the most exciting because there's just a sheer volume of potential. There's so many people in that group. And in Producing Open Source Software, the book by Carl Fogel, he says that each interaction with a user is an opportunity to get a new participant. And so when we think about passive contribution from that lens, it's, you know, maybe there's the next lead developer or the next plugin reviewer or theme developer, and we just don't know it yet because we haven't interacted with them in the right way to inspire them or show them the way or help them understand how. I'm focusing on how do you effectively balance between those two groups? Because it's important that as an active contributor, you do at times remain passive, but mm-hmm. you should be self-aware of that and understand that even criticism is important. And it's easier to flesh things out and understand things better if we participate together rather than remaining passive too long and then you move on to something else or forget it or don't have the same viewpoint in 2 weeks. And then we can never properly give that credence and consider it.
Right. And I guess it's easier and more effective to be a passive contributor when you've also had experience being an active contributor too. I guess that's the flip side of that. You can be more generous and more understanding. Because you've
and there's
been
also
on the
dynamics
other side.
Around it, like sponsorship, like you said, mm-hmm. People that understand the requirements behind actively contributing and being reliable and being prepared, right? And there's non-zero time requirements and resource requirements for that. Mm-hmm. And so, to that statement too, is that if you have been active in the past, you understand those things better. And so, how can we make these more obvious or clear or educate more people about the dynamics of open source and how projects actually are maintained so that we can possibly activate more of these contributors to grow our project and open source in general.
Mm. That brings a lot more nuance to my default stance of if you don't like something, then just do it. Just change it. This is an open source project.
And we need people like that. Like we do need some people to do that, right? And the other aspect is that like when you do that, it's important to approach it like, don't show up saying someone made the wrong decision. Show up seeking an understanding and context. And we can never know everything about a single thing. It's impossible in the world of the internet and especially where there's just so much information. There's so many people participating in different things and discussions. There's history, right? Open source has been around for decades now. And so there's people that have probably dealt with the same problems that you're looking to solve now.
You
have to approach it constructively. And so knowing which group you're in can help you do that more effectively and arrive at a better result for everybody.
There's two threads here that are standing out to me that I'd like to pull on, so to speak. The first, I'm thinking more about this idea of active and passive, and I'd like to talk about this. How do you better harness the energy of these passive contributors? I want to talk about that, and then I would like to touch on like how do you move from passive to active, because I have some of my own experiences there that are standing out. But on the first one thing that stood out to me that makes WordPress and open source like ecosystems and software unique is I think there's a lot of what I would visualize as like latent energy in the space that's built up by folks that are using it, that are having their own little worlds of of usage and experience with it. And I'm curious for your perspective on this. It's like I'm hearing you, and I haven't heard a lot of this, advocating for like the value of passive. And that's resonating with my own experience and thinking on it. And one of the things that I've wrestled with is I think I've presumed this, like, okay, the goal is to move people from active or from passive to active, right? And that makes sense. And you have a percentage of that. But what's standing out to me is like, how could we better think about the value of passive and harnessing some of that energy more effectively? You gave one example with the value of making decisions based on usage, which, you know, we're getting that value. There's an interesting question about how do you do that effectively in open source software? because we don't have this sort of, we don't have all those usage insights. But that's the first thing I love your input on. How do we better harness as a project and as an ecosystem all this passive energy that's in the space?
One thing that I was considering is that in education, there's something called the student-teacher ratio. And so, you know, it's usually like 10 to 1 if it's really good, or 20 or 30 to 1 if it's not so good. But it's essentially just a metric to measure the density of students in each classroom per adult, right? And so in theory, the less students you have per teacher, the better their education ends up being because they have more one-on-one attention. And it doesn't track that way 100% because there's other things at play as well. But you know, what if there's a third group where it's kind of people in limbo, or people that are aware of this tension between the two groups and they're not quite sure which way they want to lean, but we need a certain ratio of active to passive or active to this limbo group where we're able to effectively give the attention that these people need. I've written in the past that, you know, activated contributors that don't receive the guidance or attention that they need are just future ghosts that are going to haunt your project. And so that's nice, just as important. Yeah. And I built off of Tammy Lister. She had a post about that. And it inspired me to write that, where it's, you know, we can activate people as much as we want, but we need to be prepared to harness them. And this is particularly important right now with the WP credits program, where these schools that are, when I first heard about it, it was, oh, there's 80,000 contributor hours coming our way. And my first response was, holy cow, like what are they going to do? Who's going to help them do that? Where are they going to find this work? How are they going to ensure they have a good experience so that they continue, you know, contributing to WordPress? You don't want them
Were you able to find those answers?
No, I'm still kind of thinking about that. But I was encouraged to know that it wasn't all at once. And so it's spread out, but there's also mentors in place that are helping classes with that. And so it's a bit more distributed, but there will be situations where we get an influx of people that need help. And at the base level, the best thing we can do is document our stuff better, our processes, our expectations, our routines. Automate what we can. My talk at WordCamp Asia is about automation and how it's worth 10 times the amount of effort to put in. And one of the things to think about automation is, yes, it accomplishes tasks, but it also documents a process, because automation is very finite. It either fails or it succeeds. And the requirements are really clearly spelled out, right? And so when you automate things, you're also documenting your processes. And Just things like that we can do to make things easier for people that are more novice or learning to pick up things and run with them. Right now, I'm documenting the process to update the version of Node.js that WordPress uses. And so we're on 20.x right now, and it still has support for another 6 or 7 months or so. But 24 just became active LTS. And so there's a few contributors that were opening pull requests to update that, which is good, but we had to step in and be like, wait a minute, this isn't as simple as it seems. You know, if you update it in Gutenberg, you have to actually update it in core first. And to do that, you have to have Node.js, that version, installed on the WordPress.org build server, which creates the actual packages for to distribute WordPress.
Wow.
And they have to be done in a specific order. And then there's a file that says what version should be used. And then there's a version constraints, which controls it. And you also have to consider things like the hosting tests that run distributed. So different hosts can run the unit tests on their own servers, and they also have to have that version of Node installed. And so getting all that stuff out of my head and documented in the handbook somewhere is just one way that I can free that process and let that historical knowledge from participating in that task over time free, so that others can actually learn about it and take it on themselves.
So I want to come back to this idea real quick of harnessing the passive, because I love what you're calling out there. I want to talk more about the active side of things. With passive, here's one example to me. What I heard you call out is like you have all these folks that are using WordPress, and their usage can help determine decisions that are whatever limited input that we do have that we can use that to make decisions. So a good example to me would be like, okay, well, how can we do that more effectively? Another thing that comes top of mind is, even though we have limited data, I could see, for instance, a hosting company who has different policies about what they collect or don't, or a particular product, may be in a position to offer even more insights to the project, being able to offer like, hey, here's what we're noticing about how this particular feature or functionality is being used. Do you feel like, are there other examples like that, or even with just that example, are there ways that we could more effectively harness this category of passive contributors?
I think we need to be better about telling our stories, and so I think that as a project we're not very good at that. We do.
You're saying
have
the
some
WordPress contributors aren't great bloggers?
Yes, in many ways, yes. So we all need to be better bloggers, I think, just like we need to contribute more whenever we can. But I think HeroPress is a great example of being outspoken about our journeys. And, you know, it's
we love you,
incredibly
Topher.
Diverse. We love Topher, yep. And I love how it's such a diverse and varying list of people that share their stories there, because there's so much there that there's so much variation that someone could find something there that resonates and inspires them, right? Hmm. Another one of my favorite examples is the keynote at WordCamp Europe last year with Noel Talk, where he talked about how WordPress was empowering people in war-torn Ukraine. And, you know, that's a very impactful and incredible story to share about how people are able to accomplish things in such a torn up world that's in flux, not knowing where their next meal or if their bomb is going to hit them the next day. But they're able to use this free software to save dogs or feed people or, you know, rescue people. And so those are the stories I think that we need to do a better job of telling, not just the individual stories of the people building the software, but also what it empowers in the world, because to me, like that's what makes it, you know, really rewarding to be an open source maintainer of WordPress, is that I never know who's using it for what. You know, some people build a living on WordPress. They have a store, they have a website, and it's their primary way to get customers or their primary way to generate income to feed themselves and their families. And so that's really motivating for me. And it's not for everybody, but it's just one of the ways we could be more vocal about what we're building with WordPress, what it empowers you to do, why should you be a part of this community, you know, what's in it for you, and how can that help you in whatever your journey is, wherever you're at in that.
What I'm hearing you say is that the stories of like how these folks are using it, these passive contributors, would be helpful to those that are active. I see a bit of a tension there in like, how do you do that at scale? And the answer may just be that you can't. Like, one thing I would worry about is like maybe, you know, 10 stories come in about how a particular feature has all this impact, and then that like would skew decisions being made in favor of that at the expense of the underrepresented majority, who just because the way we work as humans, we tend to not think well about really big numbers, and we have what kind of what's in front of us. But maybe that's a small concern. What I'm hearing you say is like the stories is the starting point to help us better understand.
Well, so to circle back, I mean, your question was focused on how do we encourage people to become active, right? Not so much how we make decisions, but more how do we activate
That's where
people,
I wanted
right?
to go. So, but the first part was this, like, this idea of like, how do we better harness the energy of the passive? And mm-hmm. one thing I'm hearing you say that's practical is draw out more, invite more stories, encourage more stories of those, like letting them know that their story is a form of contribution that's valuable.
It's reminds me a lot of what we were doing in the early Gutenberg days of like the beta period of Gutenberg. I like to think of those as the good old days where we were shopping around this plugin and getting lots and lots of feedback. And there was a whole bunch of contribution in the community around and people were excited, but specifically around user testing, around like recording videos of people using it and taking highlights from that. And man, imagine what could be done these days with AI. And I know that you did a bunch of that with the notes feature, right?
So I think that was a great time. And I really want to get back to doing more user testing like that. But I think at the time, it was a bad student-teacher ratio there, right? We had too many people that were heads down in the weeds building the thing. We had some people that were out there finding feedback, and then we didn't have enough people in the middle that were reacting to that feedback and blending it into what was being built, and harnessing that middle ground of people who were becoming more active, right, through their feedback and being more vocal. But we weren't able to harness all of that to the best of our ability because our ratio was off there. And so that there was a great example of, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all formula, and it likely changes even between a project, given times of year or what's being worked on. But being mindful of what that ratio is very important, because it can help you more effectively accept feedback and improve things, or it can help you more effectively take those people that might be the next all-stars of the community and onboard them and guide them to the right way to do things. It's just something that's so important to be mindful of.
And it almost gets back to what you were talking about earlier with automation. I know when you talk about automation, when you talked about it earlier, usually we think of, you know, processes that run in the background, scripts and whatever. But also when I think of automation, I think of workflows, manual workflows that we execute by hand. And I think that is a kind of automation too. So I wonder if there do need to be some kind of processes around that. So imagine in the GitHub for Gutenberg, if where we've got like little tags for needs design feedback, we could have a little tag for needs user testing. And then someone can grab that and or maybe like make a couple of different variations of it, mockups, or maybe a few different pull requests to test. That's one feature that I think a lot of people don't know about, is being able to spin up WordPress Playground off of a pull request, which I love. And
that could be an easy way to activate contributors, right?
They
see something that's affecting them. They look at that and I can actually just test this right now. And then maybe that's their on-ramp to contributing.
I think in general, those GitHub tags are one of the most effective ways of attracting contributors. And I know that Track has similar things, but they're not colorful and they're not pretty and it's not easy to find. And I mean that genuinely. I do. And so like if I'm trying to show somebody, oh, you're not technical, here's how you can contribute, I'm going to GitHub and looking for the needs design feedback tag or needs whatever. You know, like we can look through the tags and go, oh, this is a tag that could be for you. And that's just such an easy on-ramp to actually starting to contribute. Oh, you're a bit of a developer, but you're still new to the project. Try this first-time ticket.
Yeah, agreed. And part of that is documenting what it is, right? And the other part is making things more approachable. You know, we have, 8,000 open tickets on Track. And at Contributor Day, the number one thing that you deal with is, I can't find something to start with. I don't know what to find to start with, right? And there's a good first bug keyword, but a lot of those are half done or half patches. And it's not clear that, you know, they might not be right. You should test them, or you could contribute your own patch. You know, that's part of the process, is different approaches to fixing it. But yeah, that's definitely, I agree. They're definitely good. I would argue that the track versions of those are a little bit better documented and they're easier to find. But you have to kind of know which labels to look at in GitHub. It's not as well, and there's so many more labels to go through on the GitHub instance. But
well, and then Track has the also has the advantage that you can more easily browse like a blessed list of these are the issues we're targeting for the next release. I think that that's a little bit harder to do also on GitHub.
Yeah, there's so, milestones, but it's difficult to they're not surfaced very well in easy to find ways. You have to kind of know which area to go in and GitHub, and even then you have to know what each one, how each project uses each one of those.
And I guess just the fact that we have this split, right? Like there's a split in the project. GitHub obviously is the one that most people are used to working with. So it's more, in theory, the interface is more modern and user-friendly, I guess. So that also causes a bit of a dynamic where you might have some like more old-school contributors going, oh, I'm just going to stick to Track. And you might have some new contributors that are, oh, I don't really feel comfortable with Track. I'm more of a GitHub kind of guy or girl. And so I'm just going to stick to this one. Yeah, I don't know how to resolve that, but I'm just, I guess, like passively contributing by calling it out.
Well, I think that the one way we're trying to solve that is just to reinforce that core is Gutenberg, right? And Gutenberg equals core. So even though they're in two separate places and the code base is divided into different areas, it's still a part of the same software and we're all on the same team. And so as much as we can, it's important to remember that. And it's just a matter of having different expertise or different experience in a different area. In the past, it might have been, oh, these people work on the multi-site component, right? But I've never used multi-site. I don't really care about it. But their input's still valuable. What they're working on is still important to the greater piece of to the greater pie. And it's just a matter of reducing the friction between those two from a process perspective. For 7.0, there's going to be some new admin pages in 7.0. And we had to redo part of the build process to support that in a way that the plugin could have those pages and they would be copied over to WordPress core and trunk in order to be tested within trunk itself. And so now that syncing process happens more often and it's aimed at making it less of an undertaking to merge all of the changes from Gutenberg that have been worked on over the last 10, 15 plugin releases into WordPress core right before beta. And then inevitably something gets forgotten and it's not anybody's fault. It's just that there's the sheer mass of what's being included is so large. And now, instead of only having the beta period to test that code in the context of WordPress itself, instead of as a plugin, which is substantially different in some cases, we have anybody running the nightly. Every time that that's updated, they are actually testing the latest in the Gutenberg plugin within the context of WordPress core itself. And so the benefits there are reducing that friction, reinforcing that we're all on the same team, but then it also just opens the door for higher quality testing and more of it over a longer period of time.
I like that a lot. So last thing that's top of mind for me at the moment is how do you help folks, how do we reduce the friction to moving from passive to active? As I think back over some of my experiences, one highlight for me was at WordCamp US. I'm forgetting who did it, but someone did some amazing work to pull together a bunch of, I went over to the hosting team table and someone had pulled together in Slack, like, hey, here's a bunch of things that could use attention today. And because I'm like, I got a couple of hours, I want to jump in and do something useful that's going to like be valuable. And I was able to take a couple of those and like, get something done. And it stands out to me how important it is, the effort that goes into making contribution accessible for those expressing the desire to be active. What I want to touch on, though, and this has come up a couple of times in some of the conversations that Luke and I have had in previous episodes, I personally feel this gap where I'm like, for instance, I've been actively using the site editor lately. I've been working on a project that's had me like doing a bunch of building and like, and I, so my familiarity has actually gone up a lot, and I've been taking that experience to.
I can hear all of the contributors when you bring up the site editor go, what's he going to say?
Sure. Well, I then had the experience of teaching someone else like how to use things in it. So just earlier today, I recorded a quick video showing how to use a particular block. And so as I'm thinking about that, there's a few times where I've noticed things that didn't quite work as expected, or there's a bug there. And I've noticed that my assumption is like, oh, someone probably knows about this. Like it'll probably get resolved in some future release. And at least for me, I felt that there's a, what is probably a much bigger gap than actually exists between my ability to notice that and give feedback on it. And that can just be on me, but I feel like others would experience the same thing where it wouldn't occur to them that their input would be valuable or could be valuable in the right place.
I want to jump in before you, JD, Jonathan DeRozier, because I think that this is something I've encountered a lot too, is there's a search problem. There's a discovery problem. How many times on Track are things being closed as a duplicate? And same on GitHub, because there's so many issues. It's just sometimes really, really hard, even if you know what you're looking for, to find the right one. I think, who was it? Somebody recently launched a AI search, like an LLM integrated MCP endpoint for being able to search Track. And I think, and I kind of hope that AI is going to be able to step in here and maybe make that particular job easier.
Yeah, the Track search, the search within Track is notoriously not great. I know some older contributors from the older days were, they would funnel all the emails from the fire hose into their email, and they would use their Gmail to find what they were looking for. Sometimes I fall back to Google and I'll do a site colon and I put Track's URL and search that way sometimes. And another thing I had seen was a colleague of mine had built something called Track Search, which was an Elasticsearch instance that consumed Track and you could find things better that way. It's not up anymore, but I think it was someone on the AI team that was playing around with that, with the MCP connection there. I don't know. I looked at it and then I never returned to it. So I need to research that again and see. I need to be passive there for a minute on my response and come back to it. I think that any signal is a good signal, even if it's negative, right? In the example you used of a lot of duplicates, at worst, it's just a signal that multiple people are having this issue and it's impacting them enough that they're finding Track and they're making a ticket, right? And there's always going to be some level of gardening that happens. Ideally, there's a reasonably low amount of friction for someone to create that ticket, right? So they have to register as a WordPress.org user and then they can create a ticket. We probably don't want just a form that's just open to the internet for anybody to show up without logging in or doing anything to submit a problem that they have, because that would be crazy. We would probably get way too much volume, right? Our ratio would be way off on that and how we're able to handle that. But we want to accept feedback and be ready to accept feedback as much as we can. And many times it's way faster for someone that's in the weeds contributing already to see something and connect it to something that already exists. And so in my opinion, it's better to have those duplicates and that stuff, because it's almost like casting a wide net, right? We're collecting as much feedback as we can, as many reports as we can. And eventually it just gets whittled down to the keepers, the ones that we don't have to throw back in the ocean for whatever reason.
What I'm hearing you say then is, and part of why I'm bringing this up is that I want to lower the barrier of thinking in my own head for this. What I'm hearing you say, in the case of like the site editor, it'd probably be to go to the GitHub repo where it's being worked on, check and see if there is something there, check for a process about submitting feedback, but then just open something up. And it, like for me, my go-to would be to like describe the issue and like record a video of the issue being demonstrated and like try to give some basic context to it and then hope that that's useful. But until I would know better, I would look for someone to say, actually, it'd be more useful if you did it this and this and this way. I'm like, oh, cool. And then, oh, I could have read that over here. Well, then how can we reduce the gap so someone else could have found that as well? Because I made some efforts and couldn't. So anyway.
Well, yeah. Just by reporting that, I mean, maybe it's true that it's not written down somewhere and you're just discovering this nuance that is missing docs or missing user docs or something. I guess, you know, your whole thing is you're assuming that things that you discover are already known by people using it more than you, right?
Right.
And I think that sometimes that's reasonable, but we should never make an assumption to that because WordPress is so great because it's so flexible, but it's also so bad because it's so flexible, right? You can have all these plugins or something and they all interact differently. They don't do things to the same quality or the same way, and they build their own, reinvent their own mousetraps. But it's great in the way that it helps us discover more edge cases and more use cases that we may not have even thought about. Maybe somebody's running WordPress on their fridge or something and they're managing their grocery list with it, or it could be anything like that. But I never assume that what you've discovered is so basic that it's already known. One thing, I do speak at a lot of WordCamps, but I get stuck in this cycle of, I didn't like homework as a student. So slide decks make me feel like homework, right? And so I get in this cycle of I'm doing my deck and I'm typing my notes out and stuff. And I get in this lull where I say, oh, this is, nobody's going to care about this. It's kind of dumb. This feels obvious, right? Everybody's already knows this. But then, you know, you come out of it, you finish and you give your talk. And the feedback after that is always rewarding because you realize, oh, wow, like I know more than most or more than some, or like there's some level you're not at the bottom with this knowledge. It's not where you're just picking up the low hanging fruit. If you're in here and you're building and you're using the software every day like we do, then you know more than most of the users. And so reminding yourself of that fact is helpful to actually getting over that hump of just sharing what you want to share and what you think, what you've found, because it's likely that it is important to someone, even if it's not something that's been discovered fresh. The way you describe it could be a way that resonates with someone else and helps them understand the feature better or the response you receive. And yeah, it's better to have an abundance of details rather than none at all because you chose not to.
I can definitely relate to getting that positive feedback after a WordCamp talk. My wife always does a good job of shrinking my head back down to size when I get home from a WordCamp. Jonathan DeRuzia, thank you so much for coming on Crossword. Could you please tell listeners where they might find you online?
Yeah, my website and my blog is jonathanderoziers.com. And I'm pretty much DesRoseJ, just DesRoseJ, on every social network, also on the WordPress.org Slack, and maybe I'll see you on WordPress Core Track or the Gutenberg repo on GitHub.